Create and Play production copyright 2025. Reuniting the Capitals by Emilio N. Williams, copyright 2025. Introduction. Once upon a time, a really, really long time ago, the world was like a smoothly running machine. The Capitals, those awesome do-gooders, kept everything working right. Imagine a world where financial capital wasn't just hoarding gold like a dragon, and political capital wasn't just tweeting mean things. Yeah, it was that good. They were the best team ever, like a superhero squad with super good benefits. They could turn a riot into a friendly tea party and make a desert bloom with, you know, a spreadsheet and a serious talk. Nobody messed with them. They were like the cool kids at school, but, you know, actually smart. The world was their playground, and they kept it super clean. But let's be real. Good things never last, right? Now? It's like someone hit the chaos button on the universe, and it's stuck on repeat. Chapter 1. Start where you find yourself. The problem started small. A little fight here, a mean comment there. Financial capital, of course, was the first to throw a fit. "These rules are stopping me from making money," he yelled, waving a bunch of stock papers. "I'm not running a charity, you know." Political capital, always ready to make a big speech, yelled back, "Oh, so now you care about making money? What about the people you're hurting, greedy guy?" He pointed his finger dramatically, almost poking environmental capital in the eye. "Enough!" Environmental capital boomed, her voice like thunder. "You're both acting like spoiled kids. While you fight, the planet is dying. We're losing rainforests like a football field every second, and the polar bears are begging for ice." Physical capital, flexing his muscles, scoffed, "Rainforests? Ice? Get real. We need roads, bridges, stuff. These whiny tree huggers are slowing us down." Social capital, wringing his hands, tried to calm everyone down. "Can't we just get along? We need to remember we're all people and be nice to each other." "Nice?" Human capital interrupted, rolling her eyes. "While you're busy hugging trees and singing songs, we're getting dumber. No one's inventing anything. We're becoming a nation of dummies." Cultural capital, trying to save some pride, said, "We are losing our history, our art, our very identity." And so it went. Everyone was yelling at each other. Financial capital called political capital a two-faced snake. Political capital called financial capital a money thief. Environmental capital threatened to send bugs. Physical capital challenged everyone to a wrestling match. Social capital started crying. Human capital started giving a boring lecture. And cultural capital began to sob about the loss of the arts. Then, one by one, they stormed off, each thinking they were the only smart one left. The results were bad. Without financial capital, the stock market crashed like a kid dropping an ice cream cone. Banks closed, stores shut down, and people had to trade things for food. Political capital's absence meant that the laws were just suggestions. Bad guys took over, and the streets became dangerous. Environmental capital's departure led to a bunch of natural disasters. Hurricanes, earthquakes, and floods wrecked everything, like the planet was throwing a tantrum. Physical capital's absence meant that bridges fell apart, power went out, and cities crumbled like old cookies. Social capital's absence meant that everyone was alone, and no one trusted each other. Neighbors were suspicious, and even families fought. Human capital's departure meant that schools closed, libraries were overgrown, and no one invented anything. People forgot how to read, think, and solve problems. Cultural capital's absence meant that museums were looted, books were burned, and the very soul of society was extinguished. Chapter 2. A Glimmer of Hope. The world was a mess, and no one knew how to fix it. Except maybe me. Emo or Emilio N. Williams, if you're feeling fancy. I'd seen enough. I'd helped businesses that were failing, fixed family fights that made other family fights look like a picnic, and even got a school to serve good food. But this? This was a whole new level of messed up. I wasn't some dreamer. I'd seen the bad side of people, the greed, the pettiness, the dumb stubbornness that could ruin everything. But I also knew that people, even the stubborn ones, could change. I'd seen it happen. I'd made it happen. My own story wasn't a fairy tale. I grew up fast, learned to cook before I could ride a bike, and could balance a checkbook before I was a teenager. My dad, a hard-working man, always said, "If you want something done right, you gotta do it yourself." And my mom, a woman with a big heart, taught me that even small acts of kindness could change the world. They were the original Capital fans, even if they didn't know it. Seeing the world fall apart wasn't just a sad thing. It was personal. It felt like watching my parents' lessons, their hard work, their belief in good people being wasted. And I wasn't going to let that happen. I knew getting the Capitals back together wouldn't be easy. They were like a family at Thanksgiving, each with their own problems. But I also knew that they were the only ones who could fix this mess. So I started small. I dusted off my old notebook, the one with the coffee stains and notes. I started making calls. I called old friends, people I used to work with, even a few people I'd rather forget. I needed to find out how bad things were, to find the weak spots. First step, figuring out the mess. I started collecting numbers, reports, facts. The numbers were crazy. The economy was a mess. The environment was ruined, and people didn't trust each other. But in the middle of the mess, I saw hope. Stories of people helping each other, small acts of kindness. It was a reminder that even in bad times, people could still be good. I knew then for sure that this wasn't just a job. This was a mission, and I wasn't going to stop until the Capitals were back together and the world was right again. Sorry, I digressed. Everything looked bad, like a dark cloud over everything. I refused to give up. I'd seen enough chaos to know that even in the darkest places, a spark of hope could start a fire. I remembered a project from my old job, a project that said working together was the key to success. I'd seen how sustaining capital, spiritual, financial, physical, environmental, political, social, and human, could change communities. Like a car engine, when all the parts work together, including the resulting cultural capital, the world runs smoothly. But now the engine was broken, the parts scattered. I'd seen the fear in people's eyes. The fear that had replaced hope. It reminded me of stories my grandma told, about hiding money during hard times, about the scars left by old wrongs. Why did it always take a disaster to remind us we're all human? Why couldn't we see the "I love you" in the little things? I knew we were making the same mistakes, and I couldn't just watch. I had to do something. I decided to tell a story. To make a podcast, to use everything I had to start a conversation. Because I'd seen it work. In cities, in neighborhoods, in offices. People were tired of being tired. It was time for a change. And in the middle of the wreckage, I saw those sparks of hope. A garden in an empty lot, neighbors sharing food, kids cleaning up a dirty park. These weren't just random acts. They were signs of strength. Proof that people weren't broken. They gave me hope. Chapter 3. The Catalyst. My idea, learned from years of coaching, was simple. People do their best with what they have, but they can always do better. They just need the right tools, the right chances, and a little push. And most importantly, they need to believe they can change things. I knew the world could only be saved by getting the Capitals back together. They were like a family, messed up but needed. And like a good family doctor, I was going to bring them back. I put together a team, a group of people who cared. There was Sarah, the tech genius who could find anything online. Carlos, the people person who could talk to anyone. Maria, the money expert who could get money from anywhere. And a bunch of others, each with their own skills. We were like a mini version of the team we were trying to build. Our mission: find the capitals and remind them why they were needed. We started with the sparks of hope, following the stories like clues. A garden here, a group of volunteers there. These were the places where the capital's power still existed. We made the final preparations for our work, while the rest of the team made plans and helped communities. We used everything we had: social media, online meetings, even posters on telephone poles. We were a force of nature, driven by the belief that the world could be saved. And slowly, we started to find leads. Financial capital was seen in a mountain retreat, political capital was rumored to be hiding in a secret government bunker, and environmental capital's energy was felt in the deep ocean. Each lead was a sign we were on the right track. And with each sign, my determination grew stronger. Chapter 4: Capitals Tracked Down One by One. Spiritual Capital. Emo and his team hiked up a mountain so foggy they could barely see. Their destination: a temple on a cliff, where spiritual capital was rumored to be hanging out. Or, as Sarah put it, having a cosmic pity party. They found her sitting still, like a statue. "Look," she said without opening her eyes. "If people want to destroy the planet, go ahead. I'm done trying to stop them." Emo, acting like a counselor, sat down. "But spiritual," he began. "People are lost. They're wandering around like zombies, worshiping their phones. We need your help." "Help?" she scoffed, finally opening one eye. "They wouldn't know help if it hit them with a fortune cookie." "Okay, maybe a little," Carlos said, "but look around. People are still trying. Small acts of kindness, little sparks of hope. We need you to make those sparks bigger." Spiritual capital didn't move. "They broke my heart, and now they want me back?" Maria finally got through to her. "Look," she said, showing pictures of kids helping old people. "They aren't all bad, and even a little faith can go a long way. Think of it as a spiritual investment. A flicker of something. Maybe hope, maybe just a stomach ache," crossed spiritual capital's face. "Fine," she sighed. "But if they start worshiping phones again, I'm out." Financial capital. Next stop, a fancy penthouse, so rich it made other rich places look cheap. They found financial capital by a gold pool, drinking fancy juice. "Don't tell me," he said without turning around. "You're here to talk about being nice again." "Actually," Emo said, "we're here to talk about chances. Think about it. Clean energy, good businesses, a world where people aren't poor. That's a great chance to make money." Financial capital raised an eyebrow. "Make money? In that mess?" "It's a fixer-upper," Emo admitted. "But with your skills, we can fix it. Think of how much money you'll make, and how much better the world will be." "And what do I get?" Financial capital asked, adjusting his diamond sunglasses. "A legacy," Maria said. "A chance to be remembered as the guy who made a difference, not just money." After a long talk, with a spreadsheet and some fancy juice, financial capital agreed. "Fine," he said, "but if this investment fails, I'm blaming you." Physical capital. They found physical capital in an old gym surrounded by rusty weights. "Remember when people cared about being healthy?" he grumbled, flexing his muscles. "Now they're all on screens, ordering food." "We need you," Carlos said, "to rebuild everything, to get people moving again. Think of the hospitals, the schools, the community centers." "And the roads," physical capital added. "Don't forget the roads. They're a mess." "We won't," Emo said. "But we need your strength, your skills. We need you to remind people that a healthy body makes a healthy mind." Physical capital looked around the gym, his old excitement returning. "All right," he said. But the first thing we're doing is fixing these treadmills. Environmental capital. They found environmental capital in a rainforest, surrounded by plants and animals. "You know," she said, her voice like leaves rustling, "I almost gave up. But then I saw the trees growing, the animals coming back." "Those are the sparks of hope," Sarah said, "the signs that you haven't been forgotten." "But the damage," environmental capital sighed, "it's so bad." "We can fix it," Emo said, "together. We need your wisdom, your guidance, to show us how to live with the planet." Environmental capital smiled. "Then let's get to work," she said. Political capital. The meeting was a mess of people yelling. Emo and his team, with their message of unity, joined the chaos. "We need leaders," Emo said. "Not just power plays. We need someone to be bigger than the small fights." Political capital, a smart guy in a suit, watched him. "And you think I'm that someone?" "We think you can be," Maria said, "if you choose to be." After a long talk, political capital stood up, silencing the room. "Enough," he said. "We have a world to save." Social capital. Social capital was already helping people, organizing groups and building bridges. "We're making progress," he said, "but we need to do more. We need to connect everyone." "That's where we come in," Carlos said. "We're here to help you, to bring everyone together." "Then let's get to it," social capital said. "We have a lot to do." Human capital. The big meeting was full of people showing how powerful working together was. "We are the change," Emo said. "We are the ones who will rebuild." Human capital, a group of people from all over, stood up, their voices echoing. "We're with you," they said. "We're ready to work." Chapter 5. A World Reunited and Under Siege. Emo felt like he could sleep for a week. Not just because he was tired, but because the world was heavy. Like carrying a giant backpack full of rocks. He looked at his team. They were worn out, but their eyes still had that spark. They had done it. They got the capitals back together. But fixing the world wasn't like flipping a light switch. The capitals were like a band that hadn't played together in years. Financial capital still complained about money, like a grandpa complaining about his lawn. Political capital and social capital almost had a shouting match over who got to help which neighborhood. And spiritual capital kept saying she was going to make them all meditate until they turned into statues. And then there was the shadow broker. He wasn't like a big, scary monster. He was sneakier, like a computer virus he hid in the shadows, messing with things. He whispered bad ideas to people like a bully in the schoolyard. He messed with the internet, made prices go up, and even started little fights to make people angry. He thought chaos was fun, and he wanted to ruin everything the capitals were doing. He would, for example, make it seem like the water was unsafe to drink in one city, and then make the price of bottled water skyrocket in another. "They think they can fix things?" he sneered, watching the capitals on a hidden screen. "I'll show them. Chaos is my game." Even with the shadow broker causing trouble, the capitals started to make things better. Fights stopped, but not without some serious talks. Neighborhoods started to get better, but it took a lot of work. The planet started to heal, but they had to make some big changes. Spiritual capital used the podcast to tell people to stay strong. Financial capital started putting money into good things, like clean energy. Physical capital fixed roads and buildings. Environmental capital cleaned up the air and water. Political capital made rules that were fair for everyone. Social capital helped people work together. Human capital helped people learn and get healthy. Chapter 6. A New Dawn and Critical Actions for Success. Under Constant Threat. The world was getting better, but the shadow broker was still out there, like a mosquito that wouldn't go away. Emo, who was now like a superhero for the world, knew they had to stay alert. He kept telling people on his podcast, which everyone listened to, We showed the world we can work together, but we can't let our guard down. The Shadow Broker will try to trick us. We have to stick together. Here's what they did to stay strong. Working together and staying safe. Countries worked together, not just to build things, but to stop the Shadow Broker from causing trouble. Fair rules and watching out. They made rules that were fair, but they also kept an eye out for the Shadow Broker trying to trick people. Taking care of the planet and being ready. They used clean energy and took care of the planet, so the Shadow Broker couldn't mess with their food and water. Learning and inventing and spying. They learned new things and invented new gadgets, not just to make life better, but to find out what the Shadow Broker was up to. Chapter 7. Epilogue. The world had changed. It wasn't perfect, not by a long shot. There were still challenges, still disagreements, and the ever-present threat of the Shadow Broker lurking in the digital shadows. But something fundamental had shifted. People had remembered what it meant to work together. They had rediscovered the power of unity, the strength that came from embracing their shared humanity. Emo, standing on a stage overlooking a bustling city, a city that had once been a battleground, now a symbol of hope, looked out at the crowd. He wasn't a superhero. He was just a guy who cared. But he had shown the world that one person, with a team of dedicated individuals, could make a difference. "We've proven that change is possible," he said, his voice echoing through the square. "But this isn't the end of the story. It's just the beginning. The work of building a better world is never truly finished. It's a journey, not a destination." He paused, letting his words sink in. "The capitals have shown us the way, but it's up to each of us to carry on their work. Every act of kindness, every effort to protect our planet, every attempt to bridge divides, these are the building blocks of a brighter future." He gestured toward the crowd, a diverse mix of people from all walks of life. "Look around you. This is what unity looks like. This is what hope looks like. And it's up to us to protect it, to nurture it, to pass it on to future generations." The crowd erupted in applause, a wave of energy that swept through the square. It wasn't just applause for Emo, but for themselves, for their resilience, for their belief in a better tomorrow. The Shadow Broker was still out there, a reminder that vigilance was essential. But the world was ready. They had learned from their mistakes, they had rediscovered their strength, and they had found their voice. And as the sun set, casting a golden glow over the city, Emo knew that the future was in good hands. The world had been reunited, and the work of keeping it that way had just begun. And they would move together. Just like that. Now that's what's up, and using military jargon or theater premieres, while this is cute and scary, it is coming to a theater near you. Stay tuned.